The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome everyone to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball, and welcome to another edition of Clown Takes. As per usual, the Red Sox continue to do their thing, and despite us, you know, talking about series wins and giving players praise, all we hear on Twitter and everywhere else is, the bastard said this, and the bastard said that, and the bastard sucked, look at this tweet. So we've got some grievances to air because we're not just going to take that line down. So yes, it's another edition of Clown Takes. I am your host, Jason Kelly, coming to you from Canton, Massachusetts. If you want to pick apart my Twitter for any reason, you can find me at Color of the Iris. Joining me on the show from Broward County, Florida is Nick Diamond. Nick, how are you?
I'm doing all right, man. You know, you guys can follow me at N Diamond Media if you'd like, and looking forward to this Clown Takes here.
Yeah, I think we got a juicy one this time for sure, I think. Also with us on the show, continuing to cause trouble and wreak havoc on the internet, from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, by way of Windham, Maine, it is Terry Cushman. Terry, how are you?
I am doing great, and I am the oldest one on the podcast, but I do cause the most mischief of anyone. I can be found at Cushman MLB, the podcast account at Bastards_Boston. Find us on Instagram and our in-print content. Search for Bastards Substack, and you can find all of that over there.
Sounds good. Well, yet again, it was another week of, you know, a lot of Red Sox tweeting, a lot of good and bad from both sides, but our account and our space really got blown up this week and was really kind of got a little busier than we were used to. And I know, Terry, you were kind of at the forefront of that and was trying to handle that as best you could with everything going on. So I will let you take the floor because it was quite an exchange going on the last couple of days.
Yeah, I had a number of people come at me from all angles, and it was for a similar theme. And the guy we're going to be clowning this week is one of our former co-hosts, Micah Storms. So just a bit of a disclaimer, I just want to throw this out there. If most of the people we clown, we don't like, but that's not the case with Micah. We clowned the Mass Live guys. I forget what the topic even was. That was Chris Cotillo and Sean McAdam. We don't dislike them, you know. So that's the case with Micah. Micah's a good guy and very positive vibe and, you know, conducts himself in a classy way. So, and it's ironic because we're doing this. Mike is the subject of this show, and this format was kind of, I don't know, the impetus for his departure. He wasn't comfortable with the Clown Takes format, and here he is this week. But he came at me today on Twitter at 10:19 a.m. I don't think I was awake yet. And I think it took me a few hours because the tweet was really cooking by the time I got to it. But he says at us, over the last 10 days, the Red Sox have won three series against three teams that are in the playoff hunt. And yet you won't find one tweet from the Bastards of Boston that talks about this team in a positive way. They aren't perfect, but there's a lot to love about this team. Now, I do operate the Bastards account, and typically when I throw a tweet out there, it's if the majority of the co-hosts would generally agree with it, you know, that's what I'll do. Now, to the contrary, and I didn't poll everyone on this, but I had a tweet from my personal account at CushmanMLB tonight where I said the Red Sox should consider replacing Craig Breslow this offseason with Zach Scott. Now, I didn't poll everyone. That was a very specific name, so I just ran with that on my personal account. And that caused a bit of a storm as well. But getting back to Micah here, so on the Bastards account, I try to keep it real. And I don't go, I've tried not to go full send one way or the other. I personally don't think we're a playoff team. And I think most of us can agree that in terms of the big picture, this team isn't any different than it was last winter. There's no pitching in the pipeline. You're going to have to sign the pitching. There's nobody coming up anytime soon. We've mentioned on recent shows, Richard Fitz, he's probably the guy that's closest to being ready, but he's a two-pitch guy. He's a fastball slider guy, and his numbers right now, he's got an ERA right around 5. So he's not even pitching well, and he's got a lot more developing to do. I'm wondering if he's even going to be a starter at this point. He might be a reliever if he's only going to be a two-pitch guy. But yeah, so I just, in terms of the big picture, I mean, I'm not going to go crazy over this Red Sox team because, I don't know that they're a playoff team. They could be. I mean, I didn't think we'd be in the position we're in. But I think we can all agree that we've overachieved. That's why we're here. And it's been the offense saving the day week after week. We haven't had a good pitching staff since probably early June. They've been scuffling, but the offense has bailed them out. So to me, this doesn't look like a playoff team. And knowing the way that this front office is, we're not gonna get a splashy, sexy move this winter as far as pitching goes. We're gonna get a guy probably on a 1-year deal, or maybe 1 year and an option. We'll probably get a second guy who's having Tommy John or whatever that'll be available in mid-July. That's been a theme the last couple of years. Chris Sale, not that we had him, but they were underwhelming due to the idea that he was going to come back mid-season and then we would be fine. James Paxton himself, I mean, we lost a full year of him. He was supposed to be ready. So that's a signature move. But this front office, I don't think there's any reason to believe that they're going to make any massive commitments. And I've had people coming at me this week. Oh, we'll make a play on Corbin Burns. We're not getting Corbin Burns. We're not going to sign a pitcher to that long of a deal, to that massive of a commitment. So that's why I'm not excited. That's why I'm not jumping up and down, because A, I'm not sold that this team will make the postseason, and B, like I've been saying in the last couple minutes, the mindset is still the same. There's no reason for me to believe that we're going to be aggressive this year in a way that we haven't been since the Dombrowski era.
So I got a lot of thoughts on this, but Nick, I'll defer to you. I'll let you get your thoughts in. Obviously you're pretty new to Clown Takes as well. So I want you to kind of get your shots in as well, if you got anything on your mind.
So towards Micah's tweet, I mean, I obviously haven't ever done a podcast with him or anything in the past. I have interacted with him on Twitter quite a lot. I remember when I first got on like the Red Sox Twitter a few years ago, talking to him. He was super upbeat, super positive, always super positive. And then I kind of remember when he kind of got on your show, he kind of bashed him a little bit, but not crazy bash him, kind of a little bit more negative. And then as soon as he left, he's back on this big positive train, back to how he was. So he kind of had a little bit of a switch up. So that's kind of what I wanted to get in. As towards the baseball side of it, and if I think this team's going to make the playoffs, I'm kind of 50-50 on it. I want them to make the playoffs, but if they make the playoffs, I don't have any expectations in a three-game series against probably the Yankees, the Orioles, or the American League West winner, so the Astros or the Mariners. When you have to go into a series with Houck, probably Cutter Crawford, unfortunately, and Bayo. I don't trust those three guys to win you a three-game series against a good baseball team. So I would like them to make the playoffs. I don't think they do. Regarding going out and getting a starting pitcher in free agency, I don't think they go pay $200 million for Corbin Burns, Max Fried, or Roki Sasaki. There is no way they do that. It's got to be Breslow's job to pick which prospect he needs to trade or prospects and go get the pitcher that way. So that's what Breslow 100% has to do this offseason. And if he doesn't, there's going to be problems. Like, we're going to have the same season again. We're probably going to be 8 to 10 games over 500, have a pretty good offense, which is overachieving. But I do think Duran is legit. Devers is becoming a star. Tyler O'Neill will be gone next year, but he's had a great year. I mean, David Hamilton is an example of a guy who's overperforming. Dom Smith is an overperformer. Romy Gonzalez is probably an overperformer. Rob Refsnyder is overperforming. So there will be regression, but hopefully there will be some improvements from other guys that are younger. So I think next year, if they don't make that big trade for an ace, and they absolutely have to, they'll be about the same. So this team will stay the same if they don't do that in the offseason.
So in response to his tweet, kind of calling us out for never saying anything positive when they win. First of all, I think that's kind of bull crap and not true. And I know that he's singling out maybe just that one account, but I know I tweet a lot when they win. Nick, I've seen your tweets when they win. I've seen Charlie tweet when they win. So the members of this crew, like, we are actually happy when the Red Sox win. And that's where I think people get it mixed up. Like, our negativity doesn't come from necessarily the team itself. Sometimes it does. You know, if they lose 12-0 and they start to drop in the playoff race, yeah, we're going to come on here and hammer them. But it's mostly, to Terry's point, it's the larger view of it. It's the negativity comes from they're winning games, but it feels like ownership, front office still is not investing in the team as much as we want them to. And I'm iffy on Breslow. I don't hate him. I'm not looking to fire him right away. But I'm also not looking at him saying, oh, my God, he's done an incredible job with this team. Like, they wouldn't be anywhere if it wasn't for him. I don't think so. I think they're getting a lot of good performances out of guys. Like, they wouldn't be here without Jarren Duran. I don't put that on Breslow. I put that on Pete Fotze and the hitting staff for, you know, correcting his batting stance and turning him around. Does Breslow deserve credit? Absolutely he does. Yeah, I'm not saying he doesn't deserve any. He got you Dom Smith. He's been a valuable member. He went out and got you relief pitching at the deadline. That was good. But he also did exactly what I thought he was going to do at the deadline. He played it safe. He gave away prospects that were all Rule 5 guys that they were going to lose anyway. He did not take a big dive and do something drastic to really help this team, not just this year, but years going forward. I had someone on Twitter the other day ask me, you know, back towards the deadline, was there anyone that you deemed to be untouchable in the organization? And I replied, the only guys I think are untouchable are Marcelo Mayer and Kyle Teal. Because Mayer is your shortstop of the future, and Kyle Teal should be your catcher of the future. Beyond that, to me, no one in this system is untouchable, and including Roman Anthony. And anyone who's listened to me knows that I am willing to trade Roman Anthony for the right guy. I would have, you know, done a Roman Anthony deal for like a Reed Detmers. I would even consider maybe Alcantara out there in Miami because he's already under control and the contract's not too bad. Something like that. So that's kind of where I get frustrated with the whole, like, going back to it, like, oh, you know, those guys are always so negative. They never say anything good. It's not that. It's that we don't just send out the, you know, the all caps tweets, oh, Red Sox win, it's the best day ever. Like, no, we cover deeper topics about what, you know, the future of the team, the front office, like our expectations for the future, stuff like that. It's as much as we react on a daily basis, we also react towards what does the next 2-3 years look like. That's what separates us. Yeah, sure. We could have a show where we just talk about every time they win, and, you know, we can do stupid little gimmicks like spilling ketchup on each other and, you know, all this other stuff that all these other shows do. But it's not who we are, and it's never who we've been. So I don't know why people are all of a sudden now like getting all up in arms about, oh, they never tweet when they win. I mean, we do. We just don't tweet every single time they win. It's not who we've been. So I just think it's people missing the point, and it's kind of becoming cheap, low-hanging fruit for all these other podcasts out there and all these other podcast hopefuls out there who are just like, oh, well, I'll just throw the Bastards under the bus because, you know, everyone thinks negatively about them anyways, and I'll get engagement from that. Okay, fine. If that's what you need to get the positive engagement that you want, and you want all those likes, go ahead. Like, we're used to it. We don't care. Like, we're going to keep doing what we do. It's just, you know, we're not going to all of a sudden just switch up and be like, oh, no, we're super positive and let's do some fun gimmicks, guys. Like, no, we're going to cover deeper topics because, as I said before, we're not at the kids' table like a lot of you are. Okay, we're not going to give out fancy, cute little nicknames. We're not going to pretend like every prospect is a future Hall of Famer. We're going to tell you what we think. You can disagree with what we think. That's fine. If you want to be all positive and you want to say, you know, this is the best team ever and, you know, they're going to make the playoffs and go to the ALCS and go to the World Series, fine. You can believe that. That's okay. I don't care. It's just that we have our own opinions too. That's why we have a show. And that's why we have a lot of followers, because some of them actually agree with our opinions. You know, just because all of you guys don't doesn't mean that other people don't as well. So it just kind of becomes like a, oh, someone else, you know, decide to attack us today. Oh, snooze. Like, it gets boring. It's like, and it really does show that, like, we do live rent-free in a lot of your heads, which is fine. I'm okay with that. If you want to keep throwing our name out there and get us, you know, get our podcast name out there, get our account out there for more people to look at, fine. Because there's going to be a lot of people that look at us and go and listen to the show and go, you know what? Yeah, they're talking sense. They're not just doing silly gimmicks and telling jokes for 2 hours. They're actually talking about real stuff. They're actually talking about the front office. They're talking about ownership. They're talking about, you know, what deals this team can make, you know, to be even better. And we're going to continue to do that. So, you know, if Micah and all these other guys want to continue to take cheap shots, fine. I get it. It's okay. It's, you know, it's the lane that he's in now. He's in the positivity lane. So it's got to be, you know, the Bastards are always wrong and keep throwing them under the bus. That's fine. I get it. I know how the game is played. It's, you know, that's why I'm not offended by it, because it's the game. You got to get on these guys' good side. You know, oh, hey, look, see, I insulted the Bastards. I'm one of you now. So it's just part of the game. It's okay. It's not going to change what we do.
So I just now I've kind of just scrolled back. I'm like, well, what the hell have I been tweeting about? And, you know, well, yeah, I guess a lot of my tweets have been somewhat negative, but zero of them were a direct result of us dropping a game. Like, I'm not going on these post-game rants or anything. So yeah, I might not be commenting on the wins as much as some of our haters would like, but I'm not destroying them after a loss either. Like I said, it's a big picture thing. And an analogy I like to use, and this might be more specific to me, but, you know, a season is a long, when you're a podcaster, baseball seasons are long. And I do every show. You guys are on once a week, but I've told people in the past, I said, you know, some people ride the roller coaster, and that's exactly what this team's been, just a roller coaster, up and down every season. I mean, we had some high points last year, even though we missed the playoffs. I think we were 10 or 12 games above 500 at one point. But some people ride the roller coaster. I'm at the point now where I watch the roller coaster. I watch them take the rides. And I've seen Micah go on swings where he'll he'll have some gripes about the team, and I don't have any specific ones, but he's had his complaints earlier in the season when we struggled, you know, before July. And, you know, post trade deadline, we've done more winning than anything. You know, like he said in his tweet, we've won three series against playoff caliber teams. So right now they're all drinking the punch and they're assuming that this is real life. This is the way it's going to be for the rest of the season. And I'm not sure. And we were talking on the pre-show before we started, Crawford looks absolutely cooked. I don't think he's going to get it right. I don't know if Hauk is cooked, but I don't think April, May, and first half of June, Hauk is coming back. I don't think we're going to see him. Can he get back to the point where he can give us a chance to win each time out? Yeah, possibly. But uncharted waters. He's way past his previous high with innings. So I don't know what to expect there. I still think Paxton is cooked. We'll see how he does on Sunday. And Pivetta's only expected to miss one start with a forearm problem, his second forearm problem of the year. So you're going to get Cooper Criswell for that. I don't like this rotation. I just don't. I don't think the offense is going to be able to bail them out every night. So that's another problem. And Micah and I kind of played patty cakes on that tweet. You know, we kept it, like I said, pretty classy. It was just a back and forth debate. And I don't mind doing that with Micah, but yeah. So let me ask you this. Let's say we miss the playoffs. We're at what, 61 wins right now? I don't know how many games are left. Probably, I don't know, 45 games or so left. Let's say we win 83 games and we miss. Then what? What was this whole season? It was a cute story at times, but you're still getting a very green executive in Breslow who hasn't really shown he can do it. And by the way, I mean, the only two impact moves he's made was Tyler O'Neill, who's been healthier. This is, in terms of health, this is probably his second best season. He did go on the injured list today, though. And Slayton. Those are the two guys that have given you the most impact. And then he's had some complimentary ones like Romy as of late, and Dom Smith, who's been decent as of late. But that's it. All the guys in place were put there by the previous executives. And his pitching moves have been underwhelming. And we're kind of paying for that right now. So if we miss the playoffs again, then what was this?
I think if you miss the playoffs, let's say you win 83 games and you miss the playoffs, you're a middling team with a good farm system. That's it. That's the best you can say, because if you're a division winner, you're an elite team. If you're in the wild card, you're a tier two team. If you miss the wild card, you miss the playoffs, especially now that it's expanded, you're a middling team. I don't care how fun your season was. I don't care what your record is. You're a middling team. But they'll still have a good farm system. And what's frustrating to me is, to a lot of fans, that's a win. That's a positive season. Well, we still have one of the best farm systems in baseball, so I can sleep happy. It's like, really? You don't want to watch the Red Sox play in October? I do. Like, even if I sort of go into it thinking, I don't know, if they get past the wild card and they have to go up against like the Yankees or Houston or something, they may not win. But I'm like, who cares? Give me a playoff series. I'll take it. You know, especially the way they played against teams like the Yankees, you know, this year, they might have a shot. But if they miss the playoffs and it's like, okay, I'm supposed to, like, what? The fact they have a good farm system, that's going to carry me through the whole winter? No, that's not enough for me, because I'm not seeing those guys yet. So it's like, I don't care. I don't care that Marcelo Mayer went 3-for-4 in AA. Like, let me know when he's knocking on the door to come up to the big leagues. Then I'll get excited. But you know, it's it, and that's the thing. All their best prospects are in Double A. No one's knocking on the door. Like, they've got a few guys in AAA that are intriguing, but, like, for the most part, the big three, they're still in AA. So it's, I'm kind of at a who cares level with them. Like, let me see it at the AAA level. Let me see them get to a point where they're, like, at the Jackson Holliday stage. And I'm not saying they have to be the number one prospect in all of baseball, but, like, let me see them get to a stage where in spring training we're talking about this guy could be up, like, second week of April or something like that if he's that good. Like, that's what I'm excited for. It just, I can't get behind the whole, like, well, this guy down in high A Greenville went 3-for-4. Like, the future looks bright. It's like, you have no idea if that's true. There's been plenty of guys that have succeeded in Double A that they get moved up to Triple A and maybe moved up to the big leagues and they flounder. So the big three doesn't do it for me, and missing the playoffs doesn't do it for me. It just, if they miss the playoffs this season, to me, it'll be kind of a failure because they have been playing well. They have been overachieving, and they should have taken advantage of that. And there's, I think, you know, we'll see how the rest of the season goes. Hopefully they don't leave games on the table that they should have won, because I think that finale in Kansas City, you should have won that game. You left that one on the table because, again, Carter Crawford can't secure the lead. And then you bring in Bernardino, who was one of your better relievers in the first half. Now he's falling apart too, and he gives away the game, and that's it. So if there's more frustrating losses like that and you miss the playoffs, the season's a failure to me. It is.
So if we miss the playoffs, I'm not going to be happy. But if we do make the playoffs, I think 99% of the credit goes towards Alex Cora over Craig Breslow. I will give Breslow a little bit of credit right now. Danny Jansen has been pretty good since they traded for him. So has Sims. He's been pretty good. So he's made two decent moves at the deadline. I didn't love him at the time. I thought Sims was a decent reliever. I thought Danny Jansen was a pointless trade. But so far, they have performed. If they don't go out there and trade one of the big three for an impact starter, I'm going to be starting calling for Breslow to be canned. There's no reason not to trade one of those guys, maybe two of them. I'm only asking for one, and go get a one or two starter, because I know you're not going to pay for one. Just do it. Just identify which one you think is going to be the worst major league player and then go for it. In my opinion, I think the easiest person you can get rid of, in my opinion, would be Roman Anthony, because you have an excess of left-handed outfielders. But I think Marcelo Meyer probably has the lowest floor, but he also has a super, super high ceiling. And Kyle Teal, I think he's a great everyday catcher for the next 10 years. And I probably would not trade him because that kind of player is super hard to find. So Roman Anthony would be my guy, but I want Breslow to go out there, identify the guy he needs to trade, and go get the pitcher that he needs. So that's what he needs to do. And Alex Cora deserves a lot of credit for this team playing hard, and they're playing with him and playing for him. And he's managing his butt off to get this team wins, and it's actually been working for him. So props to him.
So another thing, not directly related to this tweet, but Micah and I went at it at various points throughout the day and evening, but he's a hardcore Breslow guy. Like, he wants Breslow to, he wants to see him through at all costs. And I've already pointed out, you know, there's really only a couple of impact guys, and the previous executives kind of did all the work as far as, you know, what this roster looks like and all that. But as I mentioned to you guys on the air, Breslow, he's extremely green. And when he calls these other front offices to inquire on which of his potential trade targets might be available, he's up against a very seasoned executive every time he does that. And he just doesn't really execute on meaningful trades. He just doesn't come away with it. There was an article where he was saying, and I've mentioned this fairly recently, that he leans very heavily on Theo Epstein, texts him multiple times a day, calls him multiple times a day. Like, this is a guy that doesn't seem to be able to think on his own two feet. And I just don't, I don't think he has a feel for it. And for all these people to pretend that he's got this decent level of credibility, he doesn't. What has he done? I think he's been extremely underwhelming. And we don't know what the vibe is in the front office. I mean, that's a very tenured front office. A lot of people have been there for 20 or more years. What are they thinking? I mean, we've all seen baseball players, rookies, come up on their first call-up, and you're looking at them like, oh, that was an ugly plate appearance, you know? Ugly swings, ugly this, ugly that. What are they thinking about Breslow from afar is what I'm wondering. Like, they know stuff we don't know. So, I don't know. It's hard for me to believe that Brian O'Halloran, Eddie Romero, and even Sam Kennedy are looking at Breslow right now saying, this guy's going to lead us to the promised land. Like, this, for sure, this is a guy who's gonna shred all these other front offices and outsmart them all, and you know, we're going to the promised land. That's a huge stretch to me right now.
One thing I wanted to point out is Breslow and Alex Cora seem to have a decent relationship compared to what Chaim Bloom and Alex Cora had. It seemed like they didn't like each other very much, or at least Cora didn't really respect his baseball opinions. That's kind of the vibe was around between those two guys. So I think now that it shows that Alex Cora and Breslow can be, that they can work together, I think ownership will respect Breslow more than they did Bloom, because they obviously value Cora's input very, very highly. So I think that they're working together will, I think they'll give Breslow more leverage or more leeway than they did Bloom.
Yeah, and I think it's a positive sign that they signed Cora to that extension, because that shows them that, okay, we, like Nick was saying, we like the relationship between you and Breslow. So you guys are now going to work together for the next 3 years to build a winner. Because again, Alex Cora is a win now manager. He doesn't care about, well, in 2028, we're going to be really good. It's like, no. I want to win now or next year. Like, let's go. So I think that, you know, that hopefully shows that they're willing to be a little bit aggressive, maybe in the off season, in terms of dealing away from that farm system and really strengthening this team. Because I talk about it all the time, but you can't keep all these guys. And this is where that other side of Red Sox Twitter just doesn't quite get it. Because every time a trade scenario comes up, oh, would you trade? And it's not even the big three. Like, would you trade Nazan, Zanatello, and whoever for this starting pitcher out here? And they'll go, oh, no, you can't give up your prospects. He's your number nine prospect. You can't give him up. No. Why would you do that? It's like, Nazan Zanatello is one of your 23 shortstops in your system. You can't keep that many shortstops. And at some point, you're going to need more starting pitching, because despite what some people say out there about, oh, we break down the Sox pipeline of pitching every episode, they don't have one. Their pitching pipeline blows. They don't have pitching in their system. It's like Terry said, it's Richard Fitz and Winkelmann Gonzalez, and both of those guys are not pitching well right now. So they really don't have, I mean, they've got David Sandlin, but I haven't looked up, you know, what he's been doing lately, but I still think he's a little bit terrible. Of a week away.
Yeah, ERA close to five.
He's
for
got
Sandlin.
Like a 5 ERA.
So there you go. It's like you don't have any starting pitching that is knocking on the door to come help the big league team. At some point, if they want to really win, because, you know, Terry was, you know, talking about earlier, Crawford looks like he's running out of steam. Houck might be running out of steam. You know, your bullpen's already starting to get taxed. Pivetta is on the IL again with an elbow thing, or a forearm thing, rather. So you're going to need to beef up that rotation at some point, and not just with 1 year, $10 million for Lucas Giolito or 1 year, $10 million for James Paxton. You're going to have to go get someone that's going to cost you. And it would be worth it. You could you might have to go get Reed Detmers, and it might cost you Roman Anthony and two other prospects in your top 15. But Reed Detmers is 25. He's a left-hander, and I know he struggled this year, but he's got electric stuff. You bring him over here, you pair him with Andrew Bailey, and you kind of get him out of L.A., where, let's face it, they ruin every pitcher they get. You bring him here, that immediately changes the outlook of this team. That now your future is Hauk, Detmers, maybe Crawford again if he can tweak some things in the offseason. You know, Giolito will be back. That immediately changes things. And again, where is Roman Anthony going to go in this system? You've got Willier Abreu, who Lou Maloney actually said this on Twitter the other day, and I agree with him. They said, well, someone tweeted, I'm saying, well, you're going to have to move Abreu to make room for Roman Anthony. No, no, no. I'm not doing that. Abreu's putting together a Rookie of the Year campaign at the big league level. He's proving he can do it at the big league level. Jaron Duran has proven that. Sedan Rafaela is slowly starting to prove that. Roman Anthony hasn't proven anything yet. So if it, you know, if it comes down to it, I'm not trading Abreu. I'm not trading Duran. I'm trading the 20-year-old that we still don't really know a ton about. But all we know is that he's labeled with number three prospect in the Red Sox system. That can buy you a Reed Detmers. That can buy you a Sandy Alcantara. That's what they have to do. And that's where, like, we will have that conversation, but everyone else on the other side goes, no, 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 that's stupid. Why would you do that? That's just stupid. You can't give up from this. You can't trade away from the farm system. It took them so long to get a great farm system. Why would you do it now? Because, and my answer to that is because you want to win. Do you want to win, or do you want to go 83-79 every year and miss the playoffs? But hey, Roman Anthony might be here one day. It's just that's where the difference is. So, you know, I don't know. It gets frustrating when it's like there is a bigger picture here. It's not just all about, well, what the latest farm system rankings come out. Oh boy, everyone, you know, let's take our pants off for that. No, like at some point, you got to look at the reality of it. The reality is your pitching has sucked for over a month now. Your offense is carrying the team. You might miss the playoffs because of that. So how do we fix that? Go trade for starting pitching, controllable starting pitching. And yes, it's going to cost you. But again, do you want the team to win, or do you just want to have a good farm system every year? Because if you just want to have a good farm system every year, then why do you bother watching the games? Like, seriously, what's the point? Go watch Portland. Like, go watch the Sea Dogs, if that's what you care about. I care about the Red Sox. I want them to make the playoffs and win. So here on this show, we'll talk about trading Roman Anthony for Reed Detmers. Everyone else is, I don't know, too scared or too naive to do that.
So with Detmers, I think his stock has dropped low enough. I don't think your big three is going to be in that deal. It could be a couple other guys you're not thrilled with potentially, but, and I would jump now. Like, now's the time to go get Reed Detmers if that's a guy you covet. I think he's an interesting, and I'm not usually a reclamation project guy, but for some reason with Detmers, I would do it. Devil's advocate here on Cora and Breslow. I wouldn't necessarily say that, you know, that ownership necessarily views Breslow in a more positive light, because look at this in Breslow's position here. Cora has saved his ass this year by getting these guys to overachieve. So now, where just prior to a couple weeks ago, the elephant in the room was Alex Cora's status. Now, let's say the deal isn't signed yet. So you're Craig Breslow. You have to replace a guy, bring in a new guy with a straight face and say, Alex Cora wasn't my guy, but this guy is. And then, if this team goes off a cliff next year, and I don't think you're going to get the same levels of overachievement. Like, if they don't make some one or two bold moves here, one on the offensive side, one on the starting pitching side, I don't think this team can replicate it again 2 years in a row. I just don't think the stars will align. But Let's just say he brings in his new guy and the team goes off a cliff, like I was just speculating. how's Breslow looking? He's probably done after next year. He probably doesn't come back. There was too much risk for Breslow to not bring Alex Cora back. He had to do it. He had to do it because his own job security dwindles massively without Alex Cora lighting a fire under these young kids and getting them to exceed expectations. So we'll see. I know I've been chirping Breslow's status. He's almost certainly going to be back next year, but if they somehow pivoted and brought in another executive, my confidence level goes way higher that, okay, we're going to get some moves here. We're going to have an adult in the room who's confident, who's at least had a front row seat to the type of moves he needs to make. And then my confidence would rise. With Breslow, I don't know. I thought the trade deadline was extremely underwhelming. Like, if he would have surprised me and made a bold move, I'd be like, okay, all right, well, okay, that surprised me. Maybe there is something here. Maybe he's learned something. There is another move he could make that would get me to at least respect him a little bit more, and that would be to go nuclear and get Trevor Bauer. He walks into that clubhouse, it's the rotation looks a lot different. And, you know, and a lot of people are saying with Bauer, oh, he's a clubhouse cancer. I assure you, for at least the last 2 months of this season, he will be an altar boy in anybody's clubhouse. He will mind his P's and Q's. He'll go about his business because he wants a contract at the end of the year. So there's not going to be any clubhouse cancers. Now, if the Red Sox gave him 2 or 3 years beyond that, you know, there could be some shenanigans out, you know, next year or the year after, but yeah, Breslow had a chance to win me over at the deadline and he didn't do it.
Yeah. I think again, it was a very, very safe deadline. So I agree with you in that regard, in terms of being underwhelming. To me, it was just too safe. And what I want to see this offseason is don't play it safe. Do something bold, you know, and I don't know what that move is yet, whether it's a trade or whether it's free agency, but do something bold, because if you just continue to play it safe, it's not going to be good enough. And I think Cora knows that. I think most fans know that. So it just don't do what you did at the deadline. Just, you know, little middling moves and say, oh, look at all I did. No, do something big that really impacts the team, impacts the rotation, impacts the lineup. And, you know, makes me believe going into next spring, like, yep, not only can they make the playoffs, but like maybe win the division, like something like that, because they do have a good core at the moment. It just needs a little bit more. It just needs that one extra oomph to really get them into that, you know, again, second top tier of the American League. So that's what I want to see. Make a bold move.
Yeah, regards to the deadline, even if Breslow just got one more pitcher besides Paxton, I mean, Paxton is a lateral move to Criswell. He's the same thing. If you just got, like, Jack Flaherty or someone else on top of it, Kikuchi or someone like that on top of it, at least you have some sort of starter depth, and you're not scrambling right now against the Astros or who's going to start on Saturday. So, I mean, just get one more guy. It didn't have to be Tarek Skubal. That was unrealistic. That was never going to happen. I mean, and Garrett Crochet, there might have been one conversation there, but as soon as he said he wasn't going to pitch this year, I'm not going to make that deal. So Jack Flaherty was probably the move, and it looked like they were in it to the end with the Yankees, and the Dodgers had the best package, but that was a toppable package. You could have topped that package easily if you wanted the player, which obviously he didn't want him enough, you know? So I think he was just a starter short at this point. Like, and at the end of the day, that's going to be one or two losses that might miss us out of the playoffs.
And I mean, Danny Jansen has hit a couple home runs. He's had a couple of key hits, but I would have preferred an everyday righty I thought Danny Jansen was extremely underwhelming as well.
I agree. I just think the offense is performing right now, so it doesn't show as much, and the pitching's not, so the pitching is a bigger problem at this moment. But obviously this offense is going to go cold in the next 45, 50 games. For a little bit, they're not going to hit like 900-plus OPS for 50 games, so they're going to go through a stretch. So I get what you're saying, but I think the pitching at the moment is the biggest weakness.
Yeah, that's going to be the reason we miss the playoffs, if in fact we do. But so all of this, we've beaten Breslow. He is like a dead horse on this podcast. We just beat him and we beat him and we beat him every week. But just again, to reiterate Micah's tweet, my confidence in this team just isn't high enough. So I'm not going to fake it and go out there and celebrate these wins when there's still a black cloud over us. And it is what it is. So I'm not out there destroying. Nobody gives me credit for not destroying the team after we lose. I didn't say anything tonight, you know, and I typically don't, but you know, it is what it is.
Yep. Like I said, we're used to it, but it's not going to change who we are and what we do. So
it's hard to get happy after a win when you're kind of hyped on Bayo's first five innings and he just blows it at the end. And it's like back to old Bayo again. Like, yep, he can't get through a full outing and keep himself composed. And I know we won the game, but it would have been that much better if we could have built on this and developed our pitcher a little bit more. And we're just not taking that next step where we should be. Maybe we have a little bit offensively, but it doesn't look like we are going to with the pitching staff.
Yeah. No, and that's the thing. Like, I think that's why, you know, Terry's not super hyped, and I think that's where a lot of us feel. It's like, yeah, you're taking some steps forward, but to say they're going leaps and bounds forwards like some people are, no, because you're already seeing regression to the mean, and it's, you know, that's the painful part. It's like, yes, they're winning games, they're in it, but I wouldn't say that anyone, you know, on at least on the pitching side, they took a step forward to begin with, but now it's they're all sliding back. So it's kind of just right where it was. It's, you know, they're plateauing. And that's where it's hard to get really hyped.
And one of the things Micah came at me with, he goes, you can't deny the progress. And I'm like, well, the pitching has regressed, and a lot of the guys that have stepped up, I mean, David Hamilton, Dom Smith, Romy Gonzalez, Tyler O'Neill, none of these guys are in the long-term picture. They're going to be replaced by the kids that we have coming up. So what is this progress? It's just a bunch of bench guys, essentially, that have overachieved. And I consider Dom Smith and David Hamilton to be bench guys. Romy Gonzalez, there are just a bunch of fringe guys that have stepped up. But are they going to be here 3 years from now? Probably not.
Your big guy who progressed is Jarren Duran. And besides that, there hasn't been super, super big progressions. Like you said, most of those guys are overperformers. I mean, Rafael Devers is having a great season, but we knew who he was. I'm not giving him credit for coming in. He's making $300 million. I'm not going to say he progressed, you know. I mean, Jarren Duran, I'll give him his credit. So besides that, everyone else is kind of not really in the long-term plan. If Vaughn Grissom came back and started hitting 320, maybe I'd say we're making progress, but that's not going to happen this year.
And it would be amazing if he did become like an impact guy, as I like to say. I mean, even 280 with, you know, and then a 20 home run, 80 RBI season. I mean, that would be massive for a middle infielder to have, but it's largely been a team that's overachieved, and that's why we're here.
Yep. And the only other guy I'd put in that category, the, you know, definitely improved category, is Abreu. I think that he definitely took a step forward. And the irony of that is Duran and Abreu are two of the guys that most fans want to trade away to make room for Roman Anthony, who we've never seen take a major league at bat, which is insanity to me. So that's where it just, again, like on our side of the street, that just doesn't make any sense to me. So.
Abreu needs a big final stretch here because I don't think he's completely broken out of the platoon category yet, because that could be what he is. Unfortunately, I'm an Abreu guy, so I hope not. He did get his first home run against a lefty this series, I think. So, there's that, but those numbers have to improve.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think we've aired out all of our grievances for this week. So definitely keep an eye out for next week. I'm sure something else will pop up. I'm sure that someone else will want to take a shot at us or whatever, but we'll be ready for it, as always. So, everyone, enjoy this weekend. Enjoy the series against the Astros. And we will talk to you all later. Everyone, take care.